Słuchasz podcastu Fundacji Bezpieczna Cyberprzestrzeń, audycji komentującej bieżące wydarzenia ze świata bezpieczeństwa teleinformatycznego.
Hello everybody, this is the next podcast Cyber by Cybersecurity Foundation, and today we've got a guest from ICANN organization, Dave Poschitello. Hello Dave.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a long week here.
Okay, do you enjoy Poland?
Very much so. It's a beautiful city, and I'm just so impressed with how well it's been restored, and the history is just so amazing.
You've given so many presentations during this week, so who have you been teaching last week?
Well, let's see, we started on Tuesday and there was an IDC conference, and I gave a short talk on the asset value of domain names and how organizations should protect them. We then met with members of the National Police to talk about some ways that we might be able to provide some training to assist them in cyber investigations. We had a very nice presentation on attacks on the DNS with the American Chamber of Commerce here in Warsaw. And then that evening had a really fun presentation with Hackerspace Warsaw. Went to their facility.
A lot of questions, I guess.
A lot of questions, and it's a very interesting organization, and they have just a gigantic room full of really interesting hardware and software and robotics. And so I was, I was at home with a bunch of nerds. Yeah, so that was fun. And then today we had 2 1-hour talks that I gave here at the Cybersecurity Foundation on attacks against the DNS and mitigations and countermeasures. And that was just very, very well attended. I was really pleased.
Yeah, we are also, because it was, as I said, trying to make some kind of summary of your presentation. And I heard it not only from myself, but also from other people. It was very consistent and perfect package of knowledge about DNS security. So we started with your Polish experience, but we should start probably with introducing you. So could you tell us a few words about what is your position, what is your daily work?
Oh, sure. I am the Vice President of Security at ICANN, and I do not oversee staff. I actually do a fair amount of work externally facing the ICANN community with law enforcement, with security research communities, with what we call cybercrime interveners or responders. So much of my daily work is with people who are investigating botnets, investigating malware infections, spam campaigns, working with them to share information to help us block list or identify domains and IP addresses that should be prevented from access so that users are not victims. We also, in my team, do a great deal of security awareness, not only for our own organization, but externally. So we have talks similar to the ones that I gave this week in Warsaw. And I do a great deal of writing. I have a blog called securityskeptic.com, and I write fairly regularly on DNS, on malware, phishing, and I also write at ICANN's blog, blog.icann.org. And there I have a monthly a security awareness column where I provide an explanation of confusing security terms. So what is a botnet, what is metadata, and things like that. And so it's been very popular. So I enjoy writing, and I enjoy presenting and sharing information. So it's a very, very good job. Yeah,
so kind of security evangelist work, it became for you, right?
Somewhat. I guess one of the problems with being in the evangelism space is that sometimes people appreciate the evangelism and sometimes people, you know, are not quite so happy, and especially when you are pointing out things that they're not doing right. So, you know, there's a little bit of navigation to try to make certain that you deliver the message in a way that people accept it as opposed to, you know, argue with it.
Okay, so let's talk about the people who for sure are not very happy with what you are doing. I mean, cyber criminals. How attractive DNS as a service protocol is for cyber criminals? How do they use it?
So so DNS is probably one of the most useful tools in a cyber criminal or cyber terrorist's arsenal, because the DNS is the way that most users who are going to be the victims access any of the resources on the internet that they wish to use. So if they want to use a website, they typically need to know a domain name. If they're receiving mail, they receive mail with hyperlinks or URLs, and the URLs have domain names. And so the criminals understand that in order to reach the victims, the best way is to actually use the domain name system. Of course, that is probably our one advantage, is that the criminals have to use the domain name system to reach the victims, and we get to see what the criminals hope the victims see. And by trying to see it first, we try to prevent the victims from seeing those same domain names. And so a large part of what our what the security daily remit is, so to speak, is to try to keep the criminals' use of the DNS away from the end users.
Yeah, it is probably, I can imagine, quite tough task. But because if I understand correctly, the challenge with for ICANN is to try to manage two things. One is to protect good enough the whole infrastructure, which is absolutely critical for the whole internet, the DNS infrastructure. And the second is this fact which we are discussing, that this is also a method of tool to attack end users. And in with your knowledge, how much this both area are concern of ICANN operations?
So we actually have, I think, different operational remit with the critical infrastructure. ICANN works, ICANN, not only the security team, but other members in the corporation who run our DNS operations, and in particular, who run our LROOT name server, as an example, work quite closely to make certain that the root name service is very stable and is operated in an error-free manner. And so that requires a great deal more staff than our team, our security team, encompasses. Along with that, there are people who participate not just from ICANN, the company, but from ICANN, the community. This is the people who are registry operators and registrars and even government advisors and public interest advisors and security experts. They all work to try to understand what policies are appropriate to both foster competition and allow the domain name space to grow and flourish, but also to try to protect the public interest. And that's a very, very difficult balancing act. And that's where an awful lot of the controversy and the challenge lies, is trying to understand where the line is between allowing competition to self-regulate and allowing for the protection of the public against harm that results from misuse of the DNS.
Oh, okay. I can imagine that it's probably in your position, I mean, ICANN position in this technical structure of the internet is very strong, yeah? But also when we hear ICANN, it is also very often the discussion about how to govern the internet. And that means for you probably to keep strong your position of the neutrality. which is a little bit, in my understanding, against that operational capabilities. How you try to balance these two things? And is it changing over the time that you probably, because it became a real problem, you decided, okay, that's the next step we should do with some support and some, of course, confirmation by the community that we try to interfere the operations and try to improve security by some technical means?
So you've asked a really complicated question, and I'll break it down into a couple of pieces. When people associate ICANN with internet governance, one of the challenges there is that really ICANN's governance remit is only over the namespace and the address allocation. And even with the address allocation, we have organizations called the Regional Internet Registries that manage, the bulk of that part of the administrative operation. So if you go to your typical long-standing engineer who is an internet person, he looks at the claim ICANN is an internet governing body and says, well, not really. You're only a governing body over the DNS. And in fact, that's true. We do not claim to be responsible for all the internet traffic. For example, we don't have a real a real role in net neutrality, in the sense that it is really not within our remit to talk about whether or not a network should or should not carry certain kinds of traffic or should be able to distinguish among traffic. We may all have our independent opinions, but from a corporate standpoint, that really is not relevant to the operation of the DNS. You also asked about the technical challenges. If you look at the DNS infrastructure, one of the things that an educated person on the in the DNS world understands is that what ICANN oversees is largely a delegation process. And so while we work directly to compose and produce what's called the root zone with other organizations, and that gets published and distributed by several organizations called root name server operators. That root zone contains information that essentially identifies the name service providers for all the top level domains. So that would be .com, .net, .org, the new TLDs like review and click and XYZ, the international domain names like the .dot Cyrillic version of the Russian Federation and the like. We don't have. Once we delegate to those registry operators, they now have the remit over their piece of the DNS. And while we can work within the generic top-level domain community to develop policy for how that should be done, there is also a whole world of country code top-level domains like .pl, and they have their own policies because they are operated by sovereign nations. They don't have a contract with a California corporation. And that's fine. There's a lot of synergy. There's a lot of sharing of information and wisdom. But then when you get down below, you start to realize how broadly the DNS fans out. You've got 250 million plus domain names that are registered. And so there are operators and administrators that have a delegation or a responsibility for each of those little pieces. And then subordinate to those, there might even be more. And that's just what we call the authoritative part of the DNS, which is the people who publish what we call DNS data, or is essentially directory data, right, of how the DNS looks. There are also people who provide an infrastructure to help end users find the addresses of the names they're using. And we call those resolvers. And there are millions of those. ICANN couldn't conceivably have oversight over the hundreds of millions of participants in the DNS. So it's a very, very challenging remit to explain to end users or to governments when there is an issue that says, well, gee, the DNS is being misused. Why don't you fix it? Well, where do we explain the lines lines of remit and scope? Always is a challenge for us.
You presented the very complicated, complex infrastructure of the technically, but also organizationally, and that reminds me that some discussion about 5-6 years ago about the idea of DNS cert within ICANN. Does this organization exist?
DNS cert. I think the less said about that, probably the better from my perspective. The concept was different from the name. And I think that, unfortunately, the name led people to make the assumption that ICANN was looking to provide some global operational oversight and emergency response that would kind of be apparent to all the rest of the certs.
Which is
a misunderstanding, and unfortunately, I think the circumstances led to, you know, to a very, very large debate and a lot of misgivings when what we had intended to do, and I know because I was part of the team that was trying to actually put together something that was a much, much more contained scope, was provide a resource where, in the absence of other certs, people might be able to come to, you know, to work on specifically a DNS issue that had a global impact. And in fact, what we ended up doing that probably approximates what I had originally intended and my team had originally intended is we published what we called a coordinated vulnerability disclosure guideline for working with ICANN in scenarios where, as a vulnerability hacker, as someone who goes and looks at the DNS and says, "Gee, I found this and it's broken. Where do I go with that? You know, and how do I go with that information to an organization that I can trust, and not maybe directly to a vendor that I might not have a contact with?" And so that coordinated vulnerability disclosure really encapsulates what we intended to do. What we intended to do was facilitate. What we intended to do was say, okay, we can be a trusted intermediary if you trust us and this other party trusts us. It's up to you. And if you like, what we can do is help facilitate an exchange of information between you about this vulnerability so that it is not disclosed in an untimely manner and people are put in harm as a result of a disclosure preceding a patch. And so that actually has worked effectively in several circumstances. And that's really the model that our security team attempts to work on a regular basis. So absent the formal notion of what a DNS cert is, often when there is a problem of that nature, people contact ICANN's security team and We don't sit there and profess to be able to fix everything. We don't have reach into everything. What we do hope we can do is take our subject matter experts and reach out to other subject matter experts in the areas where there are people who can help, and within what we call a trust-based collaborative network, share the intelligence, share the insights, and come up with a remedy. I certainly have no ambition to be the king of the internet, though I joke about it. And I know that that none of my team wants to do that. What we want to do is eliminate the harm. And we work on a daily basis with hundreds of people who are like us or better, in terms of expertise and reach. And we just want to eliminate the harm. And so the more people would sort of back off ownership and understand that, the problem is all ours, the solution can be everyone's, and the success can be everyone's, the better off we all would be.
Yeah, that reminds me a little bit of concept of EuroCert from the late 90s, previous century, mm-hmm. when everybody thought that could be a risk of being some king of the certs in Europe, and they don't accept it. Yeah, so absolutely, this is not... I would like to emphasize that the cert is not about being king, but rather being a servant, serving some cert services. And I also mentioned the DNS cert because if I remember, the goals of this idea was to build a good relationship and and make the awareness within the TLD operators that they should very much invest or build the cybersecurity capability. How does it work? What is the situation now? Do you see the big difference between TLD operators, and one of them are really good, some are so bad? And is there any correlation with this fact to the as how the cyber criminals are strong in particular dot something, some national domains or other top-level domains?
So again, you've asked a very complicated question, and I'll try to break it down into different pieces. The first part of your question was what is the cybersecurity competency among the registry operators? And like other businesses and other business segments in the U.S., we call these verticals. If you go and you look at the registry operators, there are some enormous operators like VeriSign, who operates CommonNet, and they have thousands of employees, and they have billions of dollars, and their infrastructure is very, very large, and they have exceptionally competent people, and we work with them every day, and I admire a great many of them. On the other end of the spectrum, there are tiny little countries, maybe island countries, that don't have billions of dollars, but they also only have maybe a few hundred or a few thousand registrations. And so their operations are, by both necessity and practicality, much smaller. And whereas the companies on the large side, like VeriSign, operate as efficiently as a Fortune 100 enterprise or a major financial, the smaller operators operate as best they can. And one of the benefits of having something like the Country Code Named Service Organization in ICANN, which is an organization that is run by the Country Code operators, is that they are able to share share their expertise, talk about recommended practices. They are also able to reach out to our security team. And in fact, in some occasions, if they've had an incident, we will lend our expertise. We will bring people in that we know are very qualified to do incident response or remediation. This past summer, we actually published a guidelines for incident response from our security team. We didn't write and create all the all the guidelines. That was a collaborative effort on the parts of 7-8 people who are all very, very well respected, very knowledgeable, and all we did was put together the information so that the operators could choose to use them, and it was very well received. So, while there isn't a formal DNS cert, you really can't stop volunteers who care about, and you should encourage volunteers who care about getting it right and making even the smallest operations resilient and hardened against attack, from doing so. And ICANN has a bit of a role there because, fortunately, our team has earned some respect, and we are able to work with a great many people who can contribute to the, to the mitigation and the countermeasures and the elimination of the abuse.
I have another question. There is ongoing discussion especially for the last few years, about the regulations related to cybersecurity, state regulations, I mean. And the part of this discussion, is very important part, is the discussion about the critical infrastructure. In your opinion, is DNS as the infrastructure service or whatever critical infrastructure in the meaning of the state regulations? Because it is no doubt it is in fact from the internet users, but in the meaning of the state regulations.
So this is a boy, you're asking great questions. We could probably spend a whole day on questions like each of these. I call the DNS a critical infrastructure because I cannot imagine the DNS or the internet without it. I cannot imagine the inconvenience that we would have if we did not have the DNS. So if you take away the DNS, what would we be doing? We would be trying to type in 32-bit addresses.
Train our brain, yeah, right? To remember
train
the
our
IP
brain
address.
To remember IP addresses of, you know, of millions of sites. And the reason why we invented the DNS back in the mid-1980s was because we had gotten to the point where, you know, at first we only had to remember 10 or a dozen IP addresses. Then it was 100, and then it was 1,000. And, you know, at that point, what we were doing was downloading files from a central repository on a daily basis. And, you know, we all the people who were on the network back then, and it was certainly a fewer number of people, said, this is madness. We can't continue to do this. We'll never be able to scale to large populations of users. So today, you know, not only would we have to remember these, you know, what we call quad, you know, quad octet IP addresses, something like 192.168.1.1, but we have this new addressing standard called IP version 6, which is 128 bits, represented in hexadecimals, separated by semicolons. And imagine if what you have to do is say, okay, I want to get to Mirage's website, and so that is FE80:0200:011F:, and on and on and on. I mean, I doubt if
somebody will check what.
and so the first part of that is, how do you remember it? The second part of it is, imagine how much, you know, much more complicated it would be to try to prevent attacks just using, you know, just using those kinds of strings. You know, use the ability to deceive users in the composition of hexadecimal strings with colons just seems to me to be significantly easier, especially in areas where they would not have the luxury of having IP address block lists, as an example.
Okay, but again, I would like to hear about your opinion about the, is it state regulations to keep DNS as a critical infrastructure, because it can cause a lot of changes in terms of doing something because you must do something.
So at the risk of getting myself into trouble, which is not something that that I do particularly well. And this is my perspective and not necessarily representative of anyone at ICANN other than me and certainly the corporation. I think you have to weigh whether or not the DNS as a critical infrastructure falls under any individual state's governance with the intent of the government and the range of activities that a government could conduct once it claims claims something as a critical infrastructure. So while I would think it would be a positive thing for for certain regulated critical infrastructure features to exist, standards for availability, standards for maintenance, standards for survivability being among those. Right. I would be very concerned to see the DNS used in a way where governments would choose to block entire top-level domains or choose to impose the way that traffic was was permitted on certain networks at certain times or certain kinds of traffic. So with great responsibility, with great responsibility comes great accountability in some senses. And so one of the things I would worry about is if you give the power to dictate what how a critical infrastructure goes to every single government, you could create this situation where it will operate differently or behave differently across many, many countries. And that would create a very, very challenging and walled garden kind of environment, potentially, that I don't think would benefit the global society and the global economy.
My last question. Today we had a workshop which is part of the Road to Security Case Study Conference. Mm-hmm. Questions are about case studies. Could you share, of course, shortly, we don't have too much time, but shortly, your most challenging case studies in these two areas which we touched today? I mean, this DNS infrastructure and end user as a DNS users. Was it Configure, for example?
So Configure was landmark because it was the first time that from a global perspective, multiple law enforcement, multiple legal jurisdictions, multiple ICANN registry operators, and ICANN and private sector actors all participated in a concerted effort to identify the malware, identify how the malware operated, identify the algorithmic mechanism that the malware used to generate names for, you know, for the command and control, and put together a voluntary effort to preemptively block these names from being used in across, you know, over 100 top-level domain registries, ultimately. And there were multiple jurisdictions. So this involved, enormous creativity at that time in terms of satisfying contractual compliance between registry operators and ICANN. It involved, significant disclosure and sharing of information between people who had not done so before. Now it almost seems commonplace because we do this fairly regularly. So that's one of the reasons why I say this in landmark. But it also involved a certain amount of creativity on the part of people who are using legal instruments like mutual legal assistance treaties to try to make certain that we could, on a given day, go and say, we're going to take the head off the Configure network by simultaneously doing all these different activities, searches and seizures, serving of orders, preemptively blocking all these lists of names. And so that was put into motion a whole new behavior of trying to contain botnets. It's very challenging because the botnets just simply morph into something new, or they nuance what they do. But at least it gave us one way to learn to work together. And perhaps the best thing that came out of Configure was the awareness that collaboration was really the only way we were ever going to be able to even contain these global threats. Right? So that's one. I think Configure was very, very important. And I probably, I would say that of all the, all the efforts that I've done, almost all of them, have sort of followed Configure in the lead. This set the tone for the way that
point of reference, right?
It really is. It's a litmus point in the history of the way that we've worked with botnets.
Dave, thank you very much. We really enjoyed your lectures in Poland. Hopefully you enjoyed time spent here, and hopefully see you next time very soon.
Thank you very much for having me, and yes, I certainly enjoyed every engagement in Warsaw and be happy to come back.
Thank you very much. Mirosław Mary, Cybersecurity Foundation. We all of listeners invite to Security Case Study Conference, Warsaw 14-15 September this year. Thank you very much.